painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
On Artbeat, Therese Tenseth interviews actor Tara Flanagan, who is delighted to return to the Great River Shakespeare Festival this year. Some of her favorite credits include Joan in St. Joan, directed by Paul Barnes, Dawn in Lobby Hero at the Theater of St. Louis, and roles in several different Shakespeare festivals around the country. Tara received her training from PCPA Theater Fest, obtained her Bachelor of Fine Arts at the Webster Conservatory, and her Master of Fine Arts at the Alabama Shakespeare Festival, and she's a proud member of the Actors Equity Association. Here's Therese Tenseth with Tara Flanagan on Artbeat.
Hi, you're listening to Artbeat. I'm Terry Tenseth, and today I have actor Tara Flanagan in to sit and discuss her craft with us. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you could come in today on short notice. Excellent. Before Friday, I love it. So you are here for the Great River Shakespeare Festival, and you have been here, you were saying, since 2003.
Since 2007 was my first year. I was a fan of the festival from the first year. My husband is a founding company member, Christopher Gerson. So I've come out here every summer since 2003 and seen the shows. The very first year, their production of Midsummer Night's Dream was the first production that I saw here.
And now are you in Midsummer's Night's Dream?
I am in Midsummer Night's
wow.
Dream. My husband was Puck in the first production, and I am Puck in this production.
Whoa, that's a little bit of a shift for you. That's fun.
It is. It's really fun. He's one of my favorite Pucks I've ever seen of all time, so I was fairly intimidated. In fact, I've been in the play twice, and both of the Pucks from the previous productions that I was in are in this current production. Chris Mixon, who's playing Bottom in this production, was Puck the first time I did the play, and my husband Christopher, who'll be playing Robin Starveling the tailor, was Puck the second time I was in the play. So, huge shoes to fill and very intimidating, but I'm so different from them. I mean, it helps that they're right. men and I'm a woman, so automatically it's just going to be completely different.
So you don't have to deal with that, well, when I did it that way type of thing, or you may want to consider.
He's a great reference, but Alec Wilde, the director of the play, has a very different take on it, which is really, really helpful and gives me a fresh way to approach the role, which I really enjoy.
And I understand the set, too, is quite different from what you would see traditionally in a production like this.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Midsummer Night's Dream, because of the fantastical element, has the potential to go in a million different directions. I've seen it set outside, where we sort of ran through a park following the characters, which was really, really fun. I've seen it set in a Renaissance time period and then sort of everything in between. We have this steel structure that's a part of our set. We call it the birdcage. It looks almost like a birdcage, and it can move on casters, so the two sides can separate, they can come together, we can travel on them, we can climb up them, and they can be our forest, or they can be our ability to float through the air. They can be sort of a million different things, so it's really fun.
That's fun.
It's like playing on a jungle gym and getting paid for it. It's great.
I was just going to say, the last time I saw Midsummer Night's Dream was in Harlem at a children's playground, and they used...
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. You just create your own environment.
Exactly. It was pretty fabulous.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So what was it in your life that said, you know what, I want to act?
Let's see. When I was a little girl, I was a gymnast and a ballet dancer. And like many gymnasts, my career was over by the time I was 10. And I needed a new after-school activity. And my babysitter's children were doing children's musical theater. And so I went along with them. And I was a very, very shy child. I think about half of actors are sort of extroverts and love performing, and the other half of us are terribly shy, and it's a huge relief to kind of give over and be this other person. And that's the way I connected to it. But I had a very small part in a musical, you know, one of 50 children who were all singing and dancing for maybe 2 minutes out of the play. And it was just that, it's very difficult to describe, but just that feeling of freedom and release and connection to something that was so joyful. And I think I loved being part of a group, being part of something that was bigger than me and yet allowed me to express myself. But it was just that indescribable feeling that this is something I have to do, that I want to do. And I was lucky enough to go to a performing arts high school. I went to public school, but we had magnet programs, and I was able to go to a performing arts high school and get a bit of experience. And right out of high school, I went to a conservatory training program, PCPA. Paul Barnes was the head of that training program at the time.
Okay.
So when I was 17, I did my first real audition for Paul Barnes, and it was a wonderful training program. And after that, there was just really no looking back. It was the only option.
Now, were these schools out east? Because I know you live out east now.
PCPA is in California. I grew up in the Bay Area in California, and PCPA is in, not Southern California, it's in Santa Maria, California. And it was a training program connected with a professional theater. And so the company members in the professional theater were our professors. And as students, we played some of the smaller supporting characters in the plays, worked on crews, and then had our own student productions. In fact, many of the people associated with this festival came through PCPA Theater Fest. Jonathan Gillard Daly was one of my teachers. Gail Childs Daly was one of my teachers. Rick Barber, who directs the apprentice actors, was one of my teachers. Michael Fitzpatrick was an intern there when I first started. So theater is a really, really small world, and you run into people over and over again. And Paul is really pretty loyal to so many of us and finds opportunities to bring us all back together again.
It seems like such a unique situation.
It really, really is. It's Alec Wilde and Paul Barnes, who together with Mark Houck started the festival. When they were starting it, you know, they had their pool of actors and artists that they wanted to work with, and pulled a group of us together. Chris Gerson, my husband, was friends with Alec Wilde from their days in Chicago 20 years ago, and this was a great opportunity for them to reconnect and come back together and work.
Wonderful. So it's just like from grade school to high school and everything, it's just a straight line for you.
It really was. I mean, I had other interests and dabbled perhaps in other areas of study, but it was the only thing I really, really wanted to do. And I went to PCPA Theater Fest, and then I transferred to Webster University to complete my BFA. It was also a conservatory-style training program. And then went to the Alabama Shakespeare Festival for my grad training.
And you currently teach as well.
Well, you know, like most actors, right? I have to have a day job from time to time. I don't always go seamlessly from project to project. And because I have that MFA, I do have the option of teaching. Teaching jobs are harder to come by than acting jobs. But an opportunity came up for a sabbatical replacement at Webster University last semester. So I was able to go and be the second year acting teacher for the spring semester.
What was that experience like for you?
It was terrifying. I think for any first-time teacher, you just spend so much time lesson planning and preparing that it really is all-consuming. I really, really enjoyed it. It's a strange thing to teach because you can teach technique, you can teach the craft, but ultimately the hope is that it is an art form, and you cannot really teach artistry. You can be an example of how to be an artist in the world, but you can't teach talent. And although I have strong opinions about technique and craft, this, it's all subjective. It's just my opinion. It was a real challenge and one that I enjoyed. You go with your first instinct and your first way of articulating a craft or technique. And then if it doesn't register with somebody, then you have to come up with another way to articulate it. And you come up with another way to articulate it. And I think teachers in any subject would say that that is really what defines good teaching, is the ability to come up with new and different ways to articulate the same thing. And so it was endlessly fascinating and endlessly engaging. And the kids I was teaching at Webster University, they were game. They wanted to do it. They want to learn. They want to be there to learn it. So that's really all any teacher can ask for. So I was very lucky with the students I had.
What do you think you learned from them?
Oh my gosh, I learned so much. I always said, like, I hope they learned something. I know I'm a much better actor and teacher on the other side of this experience, just for that very thing, that having to challenge yourself to really articulate what it is that you think and believe and know. You find out that you actually know something. Going into it, I was really afraid that I wasn't going to have any information or skill or insight. And once you get talking, you realize, oh my gosh, yes, I did go to school for 7 years and I have been an actor for a decade. And there are a couple of things that I know, but having to articulate it, having to actually consider it and put it out there in a way that another person can understand, forces you to process things more deeply. So I feel like it was a wonderful refresher course for me and helped me fine-tune things that I believe and think, and then I could bring it into my work this summer, perhaps in a more conscious way than I have in a few years.
Now, you have a lot of background, like you were saying, in Shakespeare. I was kind of trying to Google some information about you. So you've done a lot, actually.
Well, it's interesting. You sort of go through these phases in your career where all you can do is get hired for new plays, and then all that anybody will hire you to do is Shakespeare, or all anybody will hire you to do are period plays. And that has definitely happened to me. There was I trained in Shakespeare at Alabama Shakespeare Festival, and then for several years, I couldn't get hired to do a Shakespeare play to save my life. And everybody you work with has a very particular way of seeing you, and they sort of assume that the way that they see you is the way everybody sees you, which is kind of fun, because then at one particular theater, I might absolutely be the character actress, and then at another theater, I might absolutely be the ingenue, and another theater, I might absolutely be sort of the mother figure. And that is really, really fun for any actor to get to play a variety of roles, and then specifically at this theater, because there is, I don't know if it's official, but there's sort of a core group of actors who come back frequently, if not every year. We have the wonderful opportunity of playing a huge variety of roles, which is the best.
You're in King Henry IV as well, aren't you?
Pretty much everybody is in everything. Yeah. There are a few of us who are in the musical as well. That's a smaller cast, so not everybody's in the musical. But I think with no exceptions, all of us are in both Midsummer and in King Henry IV, which is also a delight because you get to work with two different directors who have very different styles of directing. And then the plays are so different. And, you know, if you're having a bad day with one play, you get to go across the hall and work on the other play and stretch yourself in a different direction.
You get to escape a little
bit.
You
get to escape.
That's nice because you can shut off the outside world, hopefully, and just focus to do that. For you, you live out east right now.
I do. I live in Astoria, New York.
So what is like a regular day for you? Do you go through a lot of auditions? Or?
Well, I have an agent who works with me in New York. So for the most part, she finds me my auditions. I'm also, you know, in contact with other theaters, and I can check out their seasons. And if there's a play that I think I might be particularly right for, I can call her up and ask her to submit me for that. So an agent will submit me to a casting director who will then decide whether or not they would like to bring me in to audition for a specific part. I'll usually find out I have an audition usually about 5 days in advance, and they will give me what are called the sides, which are just the tiny chunk of the script that they would like you to prepare. Mm. So you'll prepare that chunk, and then you'll have your audition. Oftentimes, you'll get a chance to run through the entire side, maybe get an adjustment and do it again. But just as often, you'll get halfway into it, and that'll be all they want to see. And usually by the end of that week, you'll find out whether or not you've booked the job. But living in New York, you know, sometimes I have to have a day job. I've done everything from cater waitering to temping to cleaning people's houses to teaching. You sort of go through periods of time where you have tons of auditions back to back to back to back, and then maybe there's a month where you just don't have anything. So you have to find things to do with your time. People take classes, people do workshop productions, maybe staged reading productions. It's a way to, you know, sort of keep practicing your craft, meet new people, make connections, things like that. So there really isn't a typical day. There are just sort of chunks of time where you're incredibly busy, followed by chunks of time where there's nothing going on. And you find a way to stay sane and keep active. The great thing about New York is that there's a huge community of actors. And so everybody who's been through an actor training program is probably going to have a huge network of friends, people who are living a life very similar to your life, who can help you figure out how to get day jobs, perhaps help you get an agent, introduce you to directors and casting directors, and a great support system for living in New York.
And you can find roommates that way too.
Absolutely. And people to sublet your apartment when you go out of town.
Which is what you're doing right now, in case people don't know. You need somebody to pay the rent while you're gone, so you just don't have an empty sitting apartment with utilities and what have you.
Exactly. Anytime I'm cast in a play out of town, part of my contract is that the theater will provide housing for me, which is great. So worst case scenario, I'm still only paying one rent.
Right.
But whenever possible, we do like to sublet our apartment. And because Christopher and I get to work here in Winona together, which is just a huge blessing to our life, we have the ability to sublet our apartment back home, and that's what we've done this summer. So we have a lovely couple who just moved to the city who are living in our apartment and maybe watering our plants. We'll see.
Well, you'll find out when you get home,
exactly.
Won't you?
Sometimes they're alive. Usually they're dead.
I think... possibly. I think it's unique that we're talking about the job situation. You could be doing multiple different things. That when you're out there, and from my friends that have done it, and my sister, it's important to find that job that'll let you go to the auditions at the different times that they happen at, because some are at the crack of morning, some are in the middle of the day, and some are really late at night. And it's just kind of a revolving door at different times.
Yes, definitely. That's why cater waitering is so great. You know, you sort of, you take your work on a job by job basis. So if you know that you're going to be busy, you simply don't accept a job that week. It tends to also be seasonal. So you know that there might be lots of jobs right around Christmas. And if you don't, if you haven't booked a show during Christmas, then you know you're sort of free to take those jobs. I was so nervous. I was a terrible cater waiter and I was a terrible temp. I had no skills, no office skills. I remember when I first moved to New York in 2000, I didn't know how to send a fax. I was the worst temp, and you just sort of nod and smile and say, yes, I will do it. And then I would get on the internet or I would call a friend and very quickly figure out how to do whatever I've been asked to do. And so I eventually started my own housekeeping business for that very reason. I wanted the flexibility. I set my own hours. If I couldn't come in, I said I couldn't come in. If I needed to go out of town, there were always a million out-of-work actors I could call upon to hand over my business to temporarily. So people just need to find the thing that works for them. Some people feel like, well, if I'm going to have a day job that isn't my dream job, I want to make as much money as possible. Right. And then for others of us, it just has to be something that I can go back to again and again if I have to and not hate my life. So for me, cater waitering was not a good fit, but cleaning houses, not so bad. And teaching certainly is really rewarding and at least dealing with my favorite subject. So.
With the house cleaning and just the amount of people that are in New York, you almost get to study every day different characters.
Oh my goodness, yes. Subway riding, sitting in coffee shops, which actors do a lot, learning their lines and cleaning people's houses. Yes, it's a never-ending parade of interesting and fabulous characters.
Right, so you can build on that in the human experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's really important to be engaged with real people. Yeah. There are so many actors who are really successful in their careers and yet because of that are so sort of sequestered from everyday people that it can sort of invite neurosis. And I think it's always humbling to be a server. It's right. always humbling to be in any kind of service industry, but I think it's really good for one's humanity. And then you have the lovely bonus of all of these fabulous characters.
Free material.
Yes, exactly.
Do you write at all? Have you ever?
I am not a writer. My husband and I are collaborators. Okay. So I do enjoy being involved in creative in the creative process, but I really am more of an idea person and a collaborator than a writer.
Okay. When you rehearse for yourself, what do you do? I mean, what do you do to get yourself into the moment to try to concentrate? Do you try to do several things like you did with your students with delivery?
That's interesting. I mean, the great thing about the training that I had was that none of the programs that I went to endorsed one technique. They all had us explore a variety of techniques so that there are things that you identify and connect with immediately, other things that don't really resonate with you, but maybe years later in your work working with a particular director, suddenly they're available to you and they work for you. So every process is different for me. I'm not one of those people that can learn all my lines before the process begins. I really need to be hearing it out loud and connecting it to the movement of the particular scene, of the particular play. I need to be looking in my scene partner's eyes and hearing their lines coming from them. So I do like to hold my script initially in rehearsal. And when we are blocking the scenes, I like to walk around with my script and hold it and get off book memorized that way. Other people like to prepare and memorize all of their lines before they come in because then they feel like they're really able to be facile in the rehearsal process. So that's consistent for me, is holding my script initially. For Shakespeare, I will look up every single word that I don't know.
Right.
I will do all my scansion, which is sort of marking the meter of the verse. I will do all of that work ahead of time. I will make sure that I can paraphrase everything and put it in my own words ahead of time. And then based on the ideas that I get from the script, I might start exploring things physically, trying to find that particular physicality. But again, I really need to be in the room with the director and know what their ideas are and how they see the character and see what the set is like, what the environment will be like, because that can really dictate so much to you as opposed to sitting by myself in my room trying to come up with everything by myself. I mean, it is a collaborative art form and I really enjoy sort of hearing what the other artists are bringing to the production, and then that gives me great ideas for how to explore the character.
Well, I can see how that would be helpful, because if you're at home, you have your own ideas of what's going on before you even get there, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I gotta shift gears and
Exactly.
Do it this way.
Exactly. And also, you can spend so much time on your own sort of trying to muscle everything by yourself. And if you get a great idea from another artist, it might help 10 things fall into place sort of instantly and effortlessly. So I do like to be open to be inspired by other people. With Puck, I was so intimidated because I had these other performances in my memory so firmly. And it is one of those very quotable parts where you just know so many of the speeches. And I was intimidated by that, and I felt sort of stuck as to how to begin. And Alec Wilde had this approach to the character that I had never seen before, but I thought was lovely and could work really, really well. And just hearing him say it instantly gave me ideas about how to move and how to interact with the other characters. And I guess I don't really plan my line readings, but once I have an idea about a character's psychology, isn't quite the word I'm looking for, but sort of their approach to the world, inflections sort of naturally just arise.
Great. Yeah. What is it about being on stage, like the feeling you might have experienced last year being on stage? What is it that gets you energized? Is it just being on stage, or is it getting the feedback from the audience? Is it?
Well, you definitely get energy from the audience. You really do. In a comedy, you, of course, get the laughter. And so it's really a tangible feedback from the audience. But in any play, you really, really get that energy from the audience that it's not quite tangible, but it's different being in a room with somebody than seeing somebody through a television set. There's something about a large group of people together having a communal experience, whether it's church or whether it's live theater, that simply is different. I love telling a story from the beginning of a story to the end of the story and being in the room with a group of storytellers and with an audience. It just heightens the experience. I feel sort of strange talking about it because I can't come up with...
Right.
I can't articulate it exactly, but it is heightened and it feels like both giving and receiving. I feel like I get as much from the audience as hopefully I am able to give to them. And, I love sort of throwing myself into something that is bigger than me and isn't about me, and yet I get to be a participant fully and throw myself fully into it. It's liberating and it's exciting, and I love it.
How long does that energy last for after the performance?
It totally depends. I mean, certainly actors... I am never able to go to bed before 2 in the morning.
Okay.
Some of the actors in the company are parents and have to get up very early to be with their young ones. So they are probably able to go to sleep right away after the play. Oftentimes, people at the American Legion are kind enough to keep the bar open for
nice.
The actors.
Okay.
They're very good friends to us, and we love going there. It's right next to our apartments. There's a pool table. Sometimes there's dancing. And it's a great place where everybody can hang out, the apprentices and the company, and we get to meet people from the community. So that's wonderful. My husband always says he wishes that theaters had a swimming pool so that after the shows, the actors would have a place besides a bar to go and burn off energy. But yes, it certainly takes a while to calm down after a play. If it's a tragedy, sometimes it's really important to just leave those very damaged people at the theater and not take them home with you. And sometimes that has to be sort of a very deliberate meditation to say... when my husband Christopher was playing Macbeth, he was so devastated by the end of that play. And it was sort of weighed heavily on his heart. And so we would very consciously just say to ourselves, let's just leave him at the theater. He's not invited home, and we'll just shake him off a little bit. Comedies are easier.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. A lot more lighthearted.
Definitely.
Because you got King Lear coming up this year. So
for The Apprentices, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Let's see how that goes. It'll be interesting. If somebody wants to be involved or, you know, become an actor, or learn the craft, and let's say you're talking to 5-year-old you or 7-year-old you, what would you say?
Get an education. Well, I mean, there's a million different ways to be an actor, so I would really hate to preach the best or the only way.
Right.
For me, it really was important for me to get an education. The great thing about being an actor is whatever field you choose to study can inform and enrich your ability, can enrich your craft. I knew what I wanted to do, and I had a really focused education. Sometimes I wish I had had a broader, more general education and then gotten really specific, perhaps in graduate school, but I wouldn't trade my experiences for anything.
Take as long as you need.
Don't be an actor.
No. Maybe that's the parents talking.
Yes, yes. No, I would definitely, for me, it was the right choice to go to school and get an education. There are so many experiences that feed you, that will help you.
And probably, I would guess, just get your hands on as much material as you can.
Absolutely. And any experience will enrich you. You know, I've been in terrible, terrible productions. Oh. And they were so valuable. You learn so much being in a terrible production. It's really hard to be good in a terrible production. And if you can stay focused and keep working and not bail on it, you get so much out of it. You're always going to meet somebody interesting. All of those early experiences are valuable, whether or not the end product is something shiny and glorious. Each experience is potentially a really rich learning experience.
Now, I suppose you can have to, well, sometimes you might have to be picky about what kind of production you're in because you need to realize how that's going to affect your career adversely.
Absolutely. As you get older, it becomes more important to say no to things, which can be difficult because, of course, all I want to be is an actor. And right. if I'm unemployed, it's very hard to say no to something.
Right.
But that is definitely a lesson I've had to learn as I get older. It is sometimes better to say no to the job.
Is there ever an embarrassing moment in theater? Or, you know, being an actor, you can just kind of turn that around, right? So, I mean,
there are constantly embarrassing moments in theater. You know, lines get forgotten, and sometimes you deal with it really beautifully and seamlessly, and sometimes people ad-lib things that are outrageous. That's part of the fun of a live theater experience. I think, unless it's a complete train wreck, I think it is also fun for the audience to know that this is live and there's no fixing it. There's just dealing with whatever happens in the moment. And I think that can be exciting for an audience to see actors work through that when actors fall to pieces and start laughing on stage and then have to try to get it back. I have been one of those actors who fell to pieces and started laughing on stage. And I have been on stage when other people forgot their lines. And sometimes I had the presence of mind to help them out. And sometimes I stood there like a deer in the headlights and watched them drown. And so, yes, all kinds of things can happen. Costumes can rip. I had a dress rip all the way up the middle and fall off of me one time in a play. And there was no fixing that. I just ran off the stage.
How horrible.
It was horrible. It was horrible.
At least it wasn't like a Janet Jackson moment.
It really was a costume malfunction.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much for taking
Thank
the time
you.
Out for us. And
sure,
I look forward
sure.
to seeing you this season.
Come to the play.
Hey, yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And more information about Great River Shakespeare Festival can be found at www.grsf.org. A big thank you to Tara Flanagan from the Great River Shakespeare Festival for taking time out for us here on Art Beat.
Art Beat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.